Hey guys, welcome to today's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. Today we have our dear friend Jenny Strickland back on the podcast. You may remember her from a previous episode where we talked about gestational diabetes. We've talked to her about fitness. She has so many golden nuggets that we're going to talk about today. But today we're going to specifically talk about fitness instructors and just diva-ness and, you know, how you can deal with divas in your life and really get the best experience or give the best experience when it comes to fitness classes. And we're going to hear an update on what's been happening in this past crazy year. All right, on to the show.
Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour with your hosts, Katie Hake and Lauren Wrighton.
Hi, Jenny. We're so glad you're back.
Hey guys, it's awesome to be back. Thank you for having me again. It's been, what, like 9 months? No pun intended, pregnancy, but really. And it's been a whirlwind, but it's been really fun.
Yeah, so I forgot that we had you on a long, long time ago to talk about the principles of wellness, or the pillars, the pillars of wellness. And then we talked to you about gestational diabetes. So back for a third time.
Oh, you know what? You're right. I totally forgot about that. We talked about the dimensions of wellness and, it's okay. Right. You can call it whatever you want. Pillars, towers, whatever. That's right. And then we talked about gestational diabetes and quick recap and update on that. I have a beautiful, healthy 9-month-old son. If you follow my Instagram, I'm sure you've seen pictures and or videos of how much of a joy he is. He is really that happy all the time. Yes. And gestational diabetes, man, I got diagnosed and I thought I did everything wrong. And Katie, do you remember me calling you crying? And Lauren, do you remember me both calling you guys like actually physically crying and in tears? Wow. And like, I did everything wrong in the world. So it ended up being probably one of the best things that could have ever happened to me. And I say that so confidently now. I had to change my diet, and it wasn't anything crazy or drastic. It was just such an educational moment for me to learn what my body needed in order to metabolize and digest carbs and proteins adequately for my needs and my own body. And I was put on a high protein, low carb diet. There was nothing I couldn't have. It was just a matter of how much and how often, which I appreciated. I met with a dietitian for this. She coached me up, and I don't think I've said this out loud to anybody yet, so you guys will be the first to hear this. I actually lost 22 pounds being pregnant, which wow. I didn't even know that was a thing I needed to. It was just excess weight that I had. It wasn't from being pregnant. That 22 pounds was below my pre-pregnancy weight. So I came out of pregnancy at a deficit, which is not the case for most people. Yeah. And that's something that I'm really proud of, because I worked really hard to stay unmedicated through my gestational diabetes. It was all diet controlled. And because of that, and that the fact that that happened, my husband and I are able to live an even healthier lifestyle when it comes to diet than we did before. We learned so much about our bodies, carbs, proteins, all of that. And we're really thankful that that happened, because it allowed us to change our diet in a way that really helps us. As soon as Ezra was delivered, they checked my blood sugar and his, and the second that that placenta came out of my body, we were both normal, regulated, and it was gone. So wow, very cool. Interesting how that happens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's really neat about that too is just the fact that you were at this moment, you know, scared, but the things that you learned, it really, like you said, it wasn't necessarily a diet, but you were just learned a lot more about your body, you know, and how you've been able to carry that, you know, after pregnancy. That's huge.
Yeah, it was definitely a wake up moment for me. And, you know, being in health and fitness, you know what you're supposed to do, but I'm not a trained dietitian, nor did I study nutrition extensively. So it was really cool to learn exactly what I needed.
Yeah. And then today we are talking about the must-dos to be a BA instructor and to bring like the best group fitness experience.
Yes, with a YASSSSS.
BABAYASSS. Give us a quick update about what you currently do in your role, your job, and how well you know your ish.
So I am currently super privileged to serve as the assistant director of group fitness and instruction at Purdue. I have an amazing graduate assistant. Her name is Christina Kors, and three super awesome lead instructors, Marisa Arakawa, Jessica Paris, and Macy Cooper, who help run our program along with 36 rockin' group fitness instructors. They teach everything under the sun. And in my role, I get to train, supervise, evaluate, and develop these students, from teaching them how to listen to a 32-count phrase, if you're old school, you know what I'm talking about, to creating choreography when it comes to strength training, dance, water aerobics, you name it. I've been doing that at Purdue since 2015. Prior to, I was the coordinator of fitness programs, overseeing group fitness instructors and personal trainers at Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff, Dreamy Mountain Town. And before that, I did my master's at Washington State University up in the mountains again. Nope, that wasn't the mountains. Why did I say that? Washington State University in the eastern desert of Washington called Pullman. Super great. And I studied sport management there for my master's. Got to serve as the graduate assistant for group fitness, doing something similar to what I'm doing now, just, you know, reporting to someone above me who did essentially what I wanted to do. And before all that, where it all began, where I got to meet you two lovelies at Purdue, being an undergrad group fitness instructor. And back then, we didn't have the fancy co-rec that is today. Co-rec is the nickname for our recreation center. Back then, we taught in a room with a pillar in the middle. Do you girls remember that?
Yes.
I always joke we'd have to like sneak around the pillar to be like, hey, do you see me? Do you see me? Oh man, if only they knew. There are no students in the co-rec today that taught in that old building. We're officially past that phase because it's more than 4 years old now. So crazy. But yeah, back then we had about 15 instructors on our team, and now there's almost 40.
Wow. So tell us about, not to like toot Purdue's horn, of course, I always want to do that, but tell us about the feedback that you always get. Katie and I have said this to each other in our own heads like a million times, but what about Purdue and their group fitness instructors is different than what you would find in just like your regular gym? What's the feedback you always get?
So in order to answer that question, I first have to tell you about Michelle Whipple. And she is someone who was all of our supervisors at one point in time. And she really laid down the foundation for a community at Purdue when it came to instructors. She taught us so much about being a family and being people who were there for each other and showed up for each other. And it's something that I think just kind of stuck in the water, in the air, through all the instructors and just the community of participants built. She built something awesome, and so it's really exciting for me to get to continue it on and to actually get to work with her again today, full circle. But our Purdue instructors are just a different breed of people. They really want to be there. Most of them start out as participants in class who know nothing about exercise or group fitness and just really like it and want to learn about it. We are able to offer a group fitness preparation workshop at Purdue, where we take people who know nothing about it and we teach them over 12 weeks what it takes to become an instructor.
Awesome.
The best program, hands down. Obviously a little biased, but like you said, time and time again, after going to other gyms, I know I can speak from experience working in multiple gyms, visiting gyms all across the country. Like nothing can relate. It can relate, but nothing I feel has ever been the same as a fitness class in that college setting specifically. But today, Jenny, you're going to give us some tips about how just instructors can hopefully deliver that same experience for people wherever they're at.
Yeah, it all starts with what you have to offer and what you have to give. Lauren, Katie, myself, all as instructors, we have different isms that I call them. And so, you know, yours might be one more, or I know, Katie, something you always say in your bio. I still remember this and I use it to this day. You say, last time, best time. And it's one of those like, oh, it's the last one. Last time, best time. And guess what? I do that all the time. And also the, are you enjoying this, or does that feel good? Yes or yes. Just little things like that, little isms like that, that we all have, or that instructors all have. It kind of makes it unique. And the participants do really catch on to those things and enjoy those things. And it's super important as an instructor to get feedback often and consistently, so you can figure out what those things are and how to play to your quirks and just build on them to make your class welcoming, make your class inviting.
I had a participant share with me about another instructor's ism, who would always say, I think it was, grab your water, grab your towel, grab your water, grab your towel. And someone called him out on it and he stopped saying it.
Aww.
And that makes me so sad, because it's like, that was your thing.
Yeah.
But she was talking about how her and the other people in the class picked up on it and kind of joked about it, but they loved it.
Yeah. I think that brings up a great point though. You know, in the college setting, getting feedback is common and constant, but like in most other, what do we want to call like a normal gym? Not like mainstream fitness. I don't know.
Commercial.
Okay.
Commercial.
Yeah. You wouldn't, like, I mean, most of the gyms that I've taught out, I would feel awkward, like handing out a piece of paper, asking like people to fill out a couple questions, but that doesn't mean that you can't do that.
Right. You know, like, so true.
Like, you can easily just like write up your own little thing and ask people to fill it out if you haven't ever gotten feedback before, you know?
Yeah.
What's another way that you could gather feedback in that commercial setting?
So as an instructor, normally speaking, you know other instructors. You learn who each other are from circles, whether they teach at your gym or another. Bring them to your class. No one's going to be more honest with you than someone who knows the lingo, knows the procedures, the operation of it all. Bring someone along with you to take your class that can be straight with you afterward and tell you directly, hey, you rocked at this, or the constructive side of, I wish you would have done more of this in order for me to feel successful. And that's the best person you can ask.
I love that. And you know what? You could even tell, you could even ask them that you'll go to their class and they can go to yours.
Absolutely.
So trade-off. I love that.
And not only is that good for feedback, but, you know, as an instructor, we teach the same class so often. For example, I taught yoga for 2 years. And while I was pregnant, I mainly taught yoga. And there were some classes where, to be honest, I would just almost get bored with my own class even. So by going to other people's classes, I could offer feedback. I could also borrow from them different sequences, poses, flows to spice my class up. And I would always get a lot more excited to teach a class after having just gone to someone else's to be able to incorporate new fun things.
I totally agree with that. If I'm ever in a funk, I just need to go to another class. And it's like, you just hear all these new cues. And mm-hmm. I totally agree. I love that as like your own personal inspiration for your classes.
Or you could decorate a shoebox and put it at the door with paper.
Absolutely.
Say, suggestion box.
You could. You could. You could also collect Valentine's that way.
Candy.
Two birds with one stone.
If you're going to give me some constructive feedback, you better also give me a Hershey kiss. Oh, that's all.
I love it. Someone once told me that there's a lot of things in the world that you could be the best at, but being an instructor, you will never be the best, because the industry is always growing and changing and trends are always changing. That could be a whole other podcast topic, mm-hmm. but as far as the growth of an instructor goes, there's always something to learn. There's always someone to learn something from. And so we truly will never be the best, whether you've taught for 5 minutes or 500 years. There's always a way to be better.
Yeah. So in planning your class, what are some things that you can do to prep for the class? I mean, you know, prepping for the actual teaching of the class, yes. But what are some other things that you can do before the class to really bring that all-star experience?
Yeah, so I have a couple like nitpicky things that I do, and I've noticed my instructors pick up on as well. I don't let anyone come into my class 10 minutes before it's supposed to start. I have kind of a, you know, people talk about open door policy. Well, I'm like that as a supervisor, but not as an instructor. I got a closed door while I'm setting the room, setting the mood, if you will, setting the atmosphere. We have, this is a really cool and cheap idea for any fitness instructor out there. If your facility allows, we painted all of our walls with whiteboard paint. So you can write on the walls with marker, which is awesome and very inexpensive to do. So on our walls, I can write out a little and kind of set the mood. It's like gift wrap and packaging, right? Gift wrap is beautiful, but bows make it even prettier, or add a little sparkle or glitter, you know? It's your way to leave a little sparkle.
Yeah.
So I will set up the sound. I will set up my equipment. I will put notes out, water out. I'll grab some towels, et cetera, and I will not let anyone come into the room until it's 100% ready. The point is being, I don't want to waste any time focusing on things for me. As soon as that door is open, it's all about the participants. So everything I've needed to do is done. All I have to do is hit play, or thanks to my Apple Watch, I can literally just press play, connected, whatever it might be. But the second that door opens, it's all about the people walking into the room, a hello, see their face. Another thing that I do is learn at least 2 names each class. That way I've kind of collected the names by the time it gets close to the end of a session or semester. And has anyone ever talked to you about the name remembering trick? I'm sure. So Katie, if I would have forgot your name, but I know Lauren's, my favorite way to figure out Katie's name is, oh, have you guys met? No, we haven't. Hi, I'm Lauren. Hi, I'm Katie. Oh, okay. Mental note. That's Lauren and Katie. And I would like write it down.
Wait, so that actually works? Because I feel like they would like wait for you to be like, Katie, this is Lauren. Like, but no, you didn't see anything?
Nope. It 100% works every single time. All you have to do is find one commonality. So, oh, you both come to my class often. Have you guys met before?
Oh, no, you guys have a shirt on.
Oh, you're both here today. Have you met?
right. So,
oh my gosh, another girl. Have you guys met? Mm-hmm. I love that. That is so sneaky. I thought it was going to be like a mnemonic device. Like, Katie.
No.
Katie. Keck.
I have heard, like, say it 3 times, or I know I always used to try to say, what's your name? Tell me a fun fact. And I'd remember some weird fact that they told me, but I am terrible with names. It's so hard for me.
I used to be terrible, but for some reason I'm like way better at names now. I'm way better. But I remember at Purdue, I was horrible at names and I didn't do a very good job connecting with my class participants. So whenever I went to MIT, I was like, okay, I'm going to do so much better of a job at this. So I bought this little black notebook and I would write down every person's name that I met, like every single day. If I met a new person, I would write their name down and I would write like a couple things. And I always thought, like, if someone finds this,
stalker.
Oh my gosh.
Weirdo.
Play real talk. I still have that notebook. It's pink. And for anyone listening that comes to my classes, don't you dare tell my secrets. But when you tell me about something going on in your life as my participant, you better believe I write it in that notebook. And I glance at it right before I open the door to the next class so I can ask you about it and make you feel really special and make you feel known. And it works. And I do care, I promise. But
right.
It's my way of remembering.
Yeah.
It's the intention. It's putting up barriers, but it's putting up systems in place to help you be better at what we're not good at.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
100%. Also, being an instructor, there is so much power in saying thank you. And I'll never forget the first time I ever took a class. It was a Zumba class at a commercial gym in Northwest Indiana. And I just felt like the star of a music video that day. I was like hooked. But I will never forget the instructor. Her name was Kim Black. And she came to the door at the end of class. She high-fived us and she said, thank you for coming to my class. Rather than me being like, oh my gosh, thank you for having me. The fact that she said, thank you for coming here and making time to come today, it made me feel like a million bucks. I was like, you're so welcome and I'll come back. Like, I can't wait to come back. And there's so much power in saying thank you. You can't ever say it enough. I don't care if you think you're the best instructor in the world. If you can't find the moment to be humble, to thank someone for taking time to be there for you, then I don't know what business you have up there.
And if they weren't there, you wouldn't have a class.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. You bring up a good point though. I think whenever, lately at least, when I've been going to classes, I'll want to talk to the instructor after. I'm like that person now.
Me too.
Because I want to be like, you did awesome. I loved the class. I just wanted to let you know. Like, that's all I want to say. But I find that like a lot of instructors are very unavailable.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a class today and I literally made a point in the cool down. Oh, I've never met her before. I'm going to go up to her and say, what a great class or something. And yeah, she disappeared.
Yeah.
And I was mm-hmm. like, wait, I was going to give you positive feedback.
Right. And I think it is awkward because you've been talking to those people for a whole hour or whatever. And so then to like just be there like smiling at them at the end and nothing, like I know that awkwardness, but at the end of the day, like you need to be available, right?
It sounds absolutely awkward. Sounds awkward, but it's not.
No, it's not.
But if you think about it, you think, oh, this is awkward, but there's a way to go about it and not be awkward.
I strongly believe that is a non-negotiable of an excellent instructor. If you can't come off as available or approachable, it's going to be really hard to get retention and to build what we're talking about, like what we have at Purdue, to build those bursting out at the seams classes. So our first week of school, we do what we call free week. And everyone knows, beware of free week, because every class is full with 35 to 45 participants. Our Friday Zumba class at 5:30 p.m. on a Friday, you guys, had close to 150 people at that class. Mm-hmm. And it's because of the instructors. It's because of the way that they come off, the way that they communicate, the way that they are. Another non-negotiable being an instructor is leading confidently when it comes to things like safety. I always say that you can never cue too much when it comes to safety. Be a broken record. I'm all for being a broken record. Have you ever heard sometimes that like what you just said, Katie, three times to remember something, or I've even heard it as seven or written down or whatever it might be. When it comes to cueing form and technique, you have to be a broken record, because the person who didn't hear it the fourth or fifth time might hear it the sixth time, and then it will help them.
Or sometimes like a cue doesn't register with you until you've been going to the class for 3 weeks. You know, you're like, oh, that's what they mean by like knees behind your toes or whatever, like a common cue.
Mm-hmm.
What you said though about like the awesome Zumba instructors, it made me think about like leaving your day at the door as an instructor. So let's talk about that.
Okay, so here's my phrase. Ready? I stole half of this from Pio, borrowed. Thank you, Michelle Park and Pio people. They say, I want drama in my Pio, but not in my life. And I love that mentality. So I've adopted a leave your baggage, whether physical or mental, leave your baggage at the door, all of it. You're welcome to pick it back up on the way out if you want, but I wouldn't.
It's not worth it, though. But I think that I used to have that mentality 100% of like, I would really separate myself as an instructor from my personal self. And so I think there's there's a way that you can be your genuine self and share a part of your life with your participants, but still not be talking about the hardships of your day or whatever, right?
Yeah, I think there's ways to incorporate showing that you're human and that you have struggles, but people don't need to know that you just got in a fight with your boyfriend and blah, 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 he cheated on you or something that's like, whoa, 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 we don't need to know all that.
Yeah.
But I had an instructor this weekend who made a really good point. You know, she teaches this class on Sundays and she put it as, you guys, at the end of class, right, after she's delivered an awesome experience, you guys, thank you so much. I needed this so much from you guys. You have no idea how much you have impacted me because I was having a crappy day. Mm-hmm. But it's after the fact, and she didn't let it impact the way that she delivered that experience. And I thought that was a tasteful way to do that.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
So here's another, this is probably like my deepest, darkest secret as a group fitness instructor. You ready for it?
Yeah.
Again, if you take my class, don't you dare tell all my secrets away, okay? It's exclusive. So I think in order to be a BA instructor, you have to not only be able to cue, but this is my secret, there are four groups you have to cue to, okay? Write this down. Get your notebook out or write this on your phone. Not kidding. Number one, cue to the person who cannot see. What does that mean? Be really clear and concise with your words. Now, you're not going to read an encyclopedia definition of a bicep curl, but instead talk about feeling, especially to someone who can't see. Use the kinesthetic cue. Talk about feeling the heat or feeling tension or whatever it might be, okay? The person who cannot see. Number two, the person who cannot hear. You got to be really big with your movement, really dramatic, really explosive. You know, that music video mentality. If you give 100, ACE says, if you give 100%, your class will most likely give 80. So you want to give 120, so your class gives 100. And you want to be extra, as my students like to say. So that person who cannot hear, you really have to show those visual cues well, directionally, whatever it may be. Number three, the elite athlete. You're going to have that person in your class who wants to be challenged, who wants to be pushed. We have a participant who takes class regularly, who always wants to do a high intensity option. Always, always, always. So no matter what, I show it because I know that she wants to see what it is. Even if she feels like she can or can't do it, I don't care. My job is to offer it as an instructor. So it doesn't matter if they are the strongest in the room or if they've never moved a day in their life. My job is to offer it so that elite athlete. And the last person is the person with limited mobility. So the person who doesn't have a full range of motion or has to do low impact movements because of their body. Now, I never want to make anyone feel any lesser because of this or, you know, any more spoiled because of the elite athlete option. But my job as an instructor is to demonstrate and offer those. Now, as an instructor, what if I can't do the elite athlete option? What if it's too much for me? Guess what, sister? That happens. Find someone in your class who can do it. I was 9 months pregnant teaching all sorts of classes, and I could not do a lot of the movements per doctor request. So what I did was scope out and study the people in my class and choose. And guess what? When I would say, hey, Katie, can you demonstrate this for me today? Yes, me. And it makes them feel so special. It makes them feel so valued. And it really gives them a sense of belonging. So being able to cue to those four people groups. And you know what? If you can think of any more, please, 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 please share with me. I really strongly feel those four cover it all. But please teach me and educate me if you can think of more. But giving a sense of belonging is what will ultimately happen if you're able to cue to those four groups.
And speaking of cues, I think that is one of the biggest things that sets a great instructor apart from an instructor that might make you feel bad. So mm-hmm. What are some ways mm-hmm. that we can use cueing to make that elite athlete feel awesome, but also make that newcomer, the person with limited mobility, how can we make them both walk out of the room feeling
successful?
I love that question. And I would say feedback, feedback, feedback. I'm interested to hear what you girls have to say about it as well. But in my experience, going up to those people individually and not singling them out by getting off the mic to tell them, hey, that looked really good, or hey, how did that feel? If I can tell someone's not being challenged, I'll go up to them, get off the mic, and say, hey, I see that you are doing really well with this movement. I'm going to challenge you. Can you try doing it this way? Or can you add, I think you might feel more challenged if you put an extra plate on your barbell today. What do you think? I'll go grab it for you if you'd like to try. And people are just like, oh, you think I can? Okay. And they just get really like a sense of gratitude or excitement, and they love hearing that kind of thing. And if someone's not doing well, it's so necessary and okay for you as an instructor to go up to them. You never want to start by saying, you're not doing this right, or don't do this, right? But instead, it looks like that move might not be very comfortable for you. Can I offer a suggestion? Here's something that you could try instead. Or what if you try positioning your body this way? Do you feel it more this way? Oh, yeah, I do. And people love that individualized personal touch. But ask for permission, right? Don't just touch someone or start moving someone's body around. Ask for permission, and you'll be surprised how people respond.
I love that you say challenge too, versus this is easier, this is harder. The way that you're describing the way you cue is really important, I think. And it, people are very receptive to when you do positive cues, right? Mm-hmm. There's something that goes on, I think, in the brain of just how we say things and people take it in a positive, they're more likely to react in a positive manner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another, sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
One more non-negotiable, and my students will love me / hate me for sharing this. I actually don't encourage the use of language that is not inclusive. For example, saying you all the time in class is a no-go for me. And the reason being is saying phrases like we, our, and let's instead of you, yours, makes there be more sense of community as well as sense of belonging. If I say we've got 10 push-ups to do, it then holds me accountable to being part of the group, and it allows the group to feel that we're all working towards a goal. Whereas if I say you have 10 push-ups to do, my authoritative nature almost resides as like a barking order rather than being a coach that is leading or guiding a team.
Yeah. And with cueing, the other piece of it is talking about like the motivation of cueing, or the motivation of why they're there and cueing towards that. So, you know, avoiding phrases like crunch that belly fat away, or like these are so cringeworthy. And we've talked about these on the podcast before, but like, I think sometimes, to be honest, our brain just goes there for some reason because it's ingrained in like what we've heard so many times. And so you can catch yourself saying stuff that you're like, why am I saying these things? So I think one of the things that you can do to prepare yourself for class is to think up, like actually sit there and write out like phrases that you want to say in class. Like, how about like we each give an example? Cause I can't think of one at this moment, but can you guys think of like one of your best like motivational phrases that has nothing to do with what your body looks like per se? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a big one you can say, any instructor can say, is in this movement, like, do you feel strong, or do you feel as strong as you, or do you feel as strong as you look right now? Like, you know, rather than focusing on your body, focusing on that somatosensory feeling, as well as staying away from things like, all right, we want, you know, we're going to work on our booties today. So here are all those squats so we can get those butt gains. Oh gosh, that makes me just cringe the thought of that, right? Like targeting specific areas in weight training. We all know about spot training and all that jazz. Sure, there are exercises you can use towards certain areas and certain strength and muscles and whatever, but for a holistic, well, full-bodied workout, we're not going to target those areas or talk just about your booty or your belly or whatever, but staying away from things like, okay, spring break's coming up, so let's make sure we go to 5 classes a day and drink water and eat an olive. It's like, no, that's not what your body needs.
But you wouldn't eat an olive that's too high in fat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Too high in sodium. Mm-hmm. My favorite cues when it comes to that is talking more about the mental aspects, because for me, that's how I'm personally motivated, is how do I feel? Like, gosh, I'm going to be so productive today, or I'm going to not kill anybody today. Like focusing on the positive mental aspects. I don't know who told me this. Maybe I'm just making this fact up. I think it was Michelle Whipple. But when we focus on how good we feel at the end of the workout during a cool down, research shows that we're more likely to repeat that behavior because we're focusing on that end result versus that my legs burning from these squats.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of my favorite cues is relating the whatever they're going through at that moment to like accomplishing the same goal in life. So saying like, you know, like, I guess you could even say this at the end. I'm trying to remember like how, in what context I would use it in a class, but you could say at the end, like, you guys did like five more pushups than you did last week. Like, I don't know. I'm drawing a blank, but you know what I mean? My brain.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
But you know what I mean? In the sense that like, if you can push yourself in the gym, then you can push yourself out of the gym. And that's, yeah. It's like you're practicing for life. When you're in the gym, you're practicing for life.
Mm-hmm. Something else, dance instructors specifically, some of my students do this and I love, love, love it. They'll take song requests and they will choreograph a song that someone requested. Just think that is so sweet and intentional, and what great customer service that is. In my cycling classes, in our cycling classes, one of the instructors grabs towels, and as she goes around to just kind of get people pumped up for classes, they're on their bikes, she will set a towel down on every single person's handlebar. And what a great little customer service piece. It takes an effort of maybe 30 seconds, but it makes a lasting impression that, oh, wow, that instructor does that for me, or whatever it might be. There's so many little ways you can do that as an instructor. And the more you do, the more you put them together. Again, it's like that bow on the present, and it makes people craving to come back and just want to tell others about you. Something really, really important as an instructor too. We all have opinions and we learn what we would like to do and what we wouldn't like to do sometimes, right? That's just kind of how the world works. If I hear an instructor speaking negatively about another instructor or a participant, they're done. I have zero tolerance for that. In order to build a community and a strong program, I don't allow that. I don't tolerate that. And that's an expectation given on day one of learning to be a fitness instructor. You cannot like someone. You don't have to be their friend. You don't have to respect. You don't have to whatever. But you will treat everyone with respect. And if you have something negative to say, you can write about it in your diary, but you do not talk about it out loud to another instructor or to a participant. Not okay.
Wow. Could you imagine what it would be, what a difference it would feel as an instructor when you work certain places if every manager had that mindset and set up day one like that? Mm-hmm. See, I think one of the differences too with commercial gyms is that it's rare that you would get all of the instructors together. And you would like start something together. It's all like people come in, people come out. This so-and-so has been here for 10 years. So, and like, it's very like flux.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can tell you too from experience. And I know you've both worked at Wise before, right?
Mm-hmm. No. So I did like 14 minutes.
Okay. So the Y is a really, really cool organization and really cool place that some awesome quality people work at. And I worked at one over the summer because I wanted to keep teaching while I was in college. And I remember feeling like I was missing something. And it was that community aspect because we didn't know each other. So I suggested to our supervisor to have a staff training. She goes, well, we can't pay you for that. I go, who cares? Let's just all show up for an hour and we can connect. And we did it, and it completely changed the dynamic that summer because getting to put a face to the name, think about it. When you have a job and you have coworkers, you're with them, you share shifts with them, you share whatever with them. As group fitness instructors, you don't do that. You don't have coworkers that you share shifts with. You see each other in passing. And so being able to connect even just once or twice a year, right? With our staff, we're lucky we get to do it once a month. But even just once or twice a year makes a huge difference because then you can set goals, expectations, priorities, all those things together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we covered everything on your list. Is there anything else that we want to talk about?
I would say not only as an instructor, but as a supervisor of instructors, my best feedback to someone who's thinking about managing instructors or something of that sort is get to know your staff. Become invested in your staff. It takes maybe 5 minutes a day to learn about somebody. Send them an email. Send them a text. Ask them how they're doing. Ask them what's going on. When your staff knows that you care and that you're invested, this is a Maya Angelou quote that I live by. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. I hope that my staff knows how much I care by this point, but I truly believe that they know that I'm there for them and that I'll show up for them. And so very rarely will they, you know, do something that breaks. Honestly, it's never, they never break the rules. They never take advantage. They don't do that because we are a team that doesn't want to let each other down. And I have to give them kudos too. When it comes to subbing classes, and as an instructor, you know, this is a thing. I never have to worry about a class being subbed out because our team is so good at responding to one another. For example, this morning, an instructor sent a message that she couldn't teach at 5:30 due to an illness. And I kept track. Out of our 36, I would say close to 15 to 20 were able to respond within an hour. Whether they could or could not, they were able to respond to at least offer up like a, hey, you're not alone, or I'm sorry, I can't, or I can, or whatever. And that just says so much to the kind of community that we have and that I'm so proud of that is built and there. And I encourage instructors to fight for that wherever they're at, as well as supervisors to have that kind of a mindset and to fight for building it as well. You can't change people, but you can change behavior and you can build that as well. It takes some time, but if you put in the effort, it can totally happen. I've seen it.
It goes so far too, because if I know that you as my supervisor are invested in me and you actually care about me, well, I'm going to do everything that I can to not let you down or help you out, you know, when you need a class covered or, you know, it's a win-win situation.
Yeah. As a manager, I invite my staff to be part of my life. I am so down with being their friend on social media or in real life or whatever it may be. Throughout my whole process of having a son in addition to our family, I have had my doors open and I really do extend that invitation freely. And I do think that it is a huge reason for our success. And I'm just so proud of all of them. They are the best. And really, I say too many times a day how lucky I am and privileged I am. And I appreciate them all so much because they make my job so much fun.
Ah, I love that. And it's just reminding me on how crazy that team environment is and how much of it, there's so much to learn there for gyms that maybe have a long way to go to create that environment. But you can create it. And as an instructor, if you don't have a lot of say in the management or whatever, you can just be that instructor. Be that instructor who is a friend. Be that instructor who goes to other people's classes and
who responds to the sub list and says, no, I cannot sub for you. Good luck. Or hope you feel better. Yeah. Or yes, I can.
Yeah.
Or, well, I can't this time, but ask me next week, you know.
Definitely. Okay, so you just brought up that like a sub situation. You know, you get sick and you teach that 5:30 a.m. class. What do you do? So what do you recommend in handling those kind of situations or like, heaven forbid, canceling a class?
Yeah, this is a great question and it happens far too often. At Purdue, we actually have a no cancel policy. Unless there is a tornado that will physically endanger people, we will put on a class, whether it's a circus or juggling, or I don't care if we, you know, like play Ring Around the Rosie for 30 minutes, we're going to put on some sort of a class. And our instructors know that. That's, again, an expectation given on day one. So I would encourage you to find out as a gym what kind of tone and environment you want to set. Think about your participants. Our participants know that if they show up, they're going to get something. Now, it may not be what they signed up for because things happen and life happens, but they're going to get something. And that's a huge thing of loyalty that keeps them coming back because their expectation of having a class is always going to be there. And so it's our job to provide.
So at the end of the day, if someone gets sick at 5:30 a.m., like, whose plate does it fall onto?
First and foremost, they've had to have exhausted all their options, asking their coworkers to help. And also, I'm okay with helping. I just don't want to be taken advantage of. So if this person is consistently needing a sub and if I'm available, I'll totally help if I can and jump in. It's harder to do now having a 9-month-old. But if I can help, I'm happy too. So they ask their coworkers, they ask their peers, and then our leadership team will step in. And if no one of the above can do it, really, we'll just figure it out. And someone will stay and teach something back-to-back, stretching or whatever it might be. I can tell you in my experience at Purdue since 2015, we've canceled 2 classes. And they were both due to an extreme illness and or weather.
Well, that's so funny that that is still the policy, because my very first class teaching ever was, there was 2 snow days back to back at Purdue, which was unheard of, like in years that they canceled classes and nobody else could teach. You couldn't teach on campus unless you lived on campus and could walk, right? Because it was dangerous and nobody else could sub. And so I got basically jumped into, had never taught my own class by myself, taught 3 classes back to back to back by myself because it was a snow day and nobody else could do it.
Mm-hmm. I taught those snow days too. I remember that, but that's hilarious. You taught 3 classes in a row.
Like just jumped right in.
Right. Like, here we go.
Here we are.
Right. As we've discussed, the program there is incredible on teaching instructors. So it wasn't like it was second day of training or something. Yeah, that's hilarious.
I just will never forget that day because like all my friends are, yeah, let's party, let's go day drink, and I'm like, I got to plan for these 3 classes. Like,
I gotta go teach
turbo marathon.
But couldn't have been like more excited about it.
For sure.
Katie, that's so funny because my first semester teaching was literally when we had a tornado in Tippecanoe County. And the co-rec was under remodel. And so our class was in a dorm. And it was literally in a dorm, like lobby conference room. Well, we all had to evacuate to the basement and take shelter. And so I was like, who's here for class today? And we literally used the hallway and had like a makeshift Tabata class. No music, no nothing. And to this day, I still like remember exactly the class that I had and happened. And people still talk about it. It's so funny.
That's crazy.
Group X stops for no one.
For no one.
Gotta get that sweat on.
Amen.
Jenny, we could talk to you for hours. I think we probably already have talked for like hours pre-recording this. First of all, we love you. We love having you on this episode today. So I have to ask the question. I know we are all dying to know the answer to. What is the secret weapon that's in your gym bag right now?
LOL. Okay, so this is hilarious. Bath & Body Works has these. You know how everyone has a subscription box these days?
Yes.
So at Bath & Body Works, fun fact, you can customize a box to send to somebody. And my sweet friend Katrina asked me to be a bridesmaid in her wedding by sending me a fitness box from Bath & Body Works. And I know, right? You have to look into this. One of the things in it was like a gel mist. It's called like a fresh spray. And it's called a cooling spray. So it like comes out in a nozzle, almost like a nice little mist, right? So it's super cute and pink and smells like clean everything. And I call it an Egyptian shower when I'm done teaching a class.
You can say that because you're Egyptian.
Right? I give myself a little spritz, a little dab, and wham, bam. And people tell me I smell so good. And I'm like, if only you knew.
It's a shower in a bottle.
That is the best when you get compliments on your hair or your stench and you're like, haven't showered in 3 days and this is only promoting that behavior.
Right? Or dry shampoo. Thank you very much. Today brought to you by dry shampoo.
You're like, my husband hates these compliments because I shower for 3 days and people compliment me and I'm like, yep, see, there you go. That's why I don't shower.
Like, wait, you've been in those workout clothes all day. Wait, I didn't. When did you shower? I didn't.
But yeah. Fresh shower gel spray mist. I don't know what it's exactly called, but look into that Bath and Body Works box. Who knew that was a thing?
Who knew?
Love it. Love it. We should put it on our favorite list thing. If we can find it on Amazon, we have a new favorite list of things we should put it on there if they sell it.
I love that.
Yeah, that's fun. Okay, thank you so much for being on the podcast. If people want to know everything that there is to know about you, how can they find you?
Follow me on Instagram. I'm an open book and love to share. My name and handle on there is Jenny Strickland with 2 D's.
Okay. And we'll tag that. We'll put that in the show notes so that people can find it if they have a hard time. So we loved talking with you and we'll talk to you so soon.
I love you guys. Thank you for having me. I'm still your biggest fan.
Do the best.
Love you.
Love you so much.